it's time to read the Des Moines Register for Friday, March 1st, 2024. I'm Dave Buzik, and my partner at the microphone for the next 90 minutes is Barb Martin. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of Iowans with a print disability. For this first hour, we'll cover local and national news from the Des Moines Register and USA Today. Our second hour starts with birthdays and obituaries, followed by opinion, sports, and lifestyle. We'll wrap up our broadcast with Dear Abby. Support for today's reading comes from the Des Moines Register and donations from individuals and listeners like you. Learn how you can keep the volunteer voices of IRIS going strong at iowaradioreading.org. Now let's take a look at the weather. Unseasonably warm temperatures come roaring back in to start March. Highs will soar into the mid to upper 70s by Sunday. Coupled with continued dry conditions and breezy to gusty southerly winds at times, there will be elevated fire weather conditions Friday and Saturday, plus possible red flag conditions on Sunday. Please monitor later forecasts for later statements. The specific day part forecast: today, clouds in the morning, mostly sunny in the afternoon, breezy, high 59, winds out of the south-southwest at 15 to 20 miles an hour, gusts up to 25. Tonight, mostly clear skies, low 39, winds out of the south at 10 to 15. Saturday, mostly sunny to partly cloudy, high near 70, winds out of the south at 15 to 20. Saturday night, partly cloudy, low 56. And then on Sunday, partly cloudy and windy. Slight chance of a thunderstorm in the afternoon, a high of 78. Winds out of the south at 25 miles an hour, gusting over 40 miles an hour. Sunday night, showers and a few thunderstorms are possible, a low around 45. Still strong winds out of the south-southeast. And then on Monday, scattered showers in the morning, then mostly cloudy with a chance of showers in the afternoon, mainly in eastern Iowa, a high around 60 degrees. Then the winds shift around to the northwest at 15 to 20 miles an hour. So certainly feels like typical windy March weather. Barb, good morning. Let's take a look at the front page of today's Des Moines Register.
All right, and the titles we have are Bravery and Sacrifice, Iowa House Votes to Permit Schools to Arm Staff, and Grassley Takes Credit for Prodding FBI to Investigate Informant. And we'll start with Iowan, part of Top Secret World War II Army, to get Congressional Gold Medal. This is by Kyle Werner. A Des Moines man is soon to be posthumously recognized for his role in the top-secret troop designated to confuse and intimidate the Germans in World War II. Information about the Ghost Army has been kept secret for more than 50 years until it was declassified in 1996. Now its 1,100 members will receive a Congressional Gold Medal, Congress's highest expression of national appreciation for distinguished achievements by individuals or institutions, thanks to a nonprofit and an Iowa high schooler who lobbied for the honor. It's been a long but ultimately rewarding effort to bring attention and much overdue recognition to the Ghost Army. Rick Beyer, president of Chicago-based the Ghost Army Legacy Project, said in a news release. The story of the Ghost Army is one of courage, creativity, reliance, and honor, and I am proud to have been a part of this effort, along with so many others, to earn the credit and gratitude from the country that these soldiers served to protect. Today, only 7 members of the troop are still living, and each is 100 years or older. 3 are expected to join the ceremony on March 21 at the U.S. Capitol. One member, John T. Cottrell of Des Moines, will be represented by his sons, Timothy and David Cottrell. The first mobile multimedia and tactical deception unit in U.S. Army history was launched toward the end of World War II with the goal of fooling the Germans on the battlefields of Europe. Known as the Ghost Army, it was comprised of 23 headquarters special troops and 3,133rd Signal Service Company special, and carried out 25 battlefield deceptions in France, Luxembourg, Belgium, Germany, and Italy. These deceptions included, but were not limited to, inflatable tanks, sound effects, radio manipulation, phony convoys, phantom divisions, and make-believe headquarters to reveal where the enemy guns were located and deceive the German troops. The troop was made up of artists, engineers, professional soldiers, and draftees. According to the National World War II Museum website, artists such as fashion designer Bill Blass, painter Ellsworth Kelly, and photographer Art Kane took part. According to the Ghost Army Legacy Project website, some soldiers even took on the roles of actors, hanging out at local cafes and spinning their counterfeit stories for spies who might lurk in the shadows. Like actors in a repertory theater, they would mount an ever-changing multimedia show tailored to each operation, the website says. Painstakingly recorded sounds of armored and infantry units were blasted from sound trucks. Radio operators created phony traffic nets, and inflatable tanks, trucks, artillery, and even airplanes were imperfectly camouflaged so that they would be visible to enemy reconnaissances. The Ghost Army soldiers were sworn to secrecy after service, and the existence of the secret troop was held under wraps until 1996, 45 years after the war was won. Born in 1923, John Cantrell was born and raised on the east side of Des Moines. Standing at 5'6" tall, he was a fresh high school graduate when he was enlisted in the top-secret Ghost Army and served as a radio operator. After the war, John Cantrell received 5 battle stars, a badge of participation in battle, including for D-Day and the Battle of the Bulge, according to his son David. His father never talked about what he had done or what he experienced overseas. Just like every other Ghost Army soldier, he was sworn to secrecy. He signed non-disclosure paperwork that he wouldn't talk about, but he wouldn't talk about what he did, David Cantrell said. He kept a diary, but the diary was mostly boot camp in Fort Knox, Kentucky, when it wasn't classified, it wasn't secret. And then once he got into the unit, he didn't write anything in his diary. David Cantrell recalls only 2 stories from the war that his father had shared, one from D-Day and one from the Battle of the Bulge. Dad was driving and the landing craft stopped short and they got into deeper water and the truck stalled, still getting occasional shells and enemy aircraft overhead, David Cantrell recalled from his father's experience at D-Day. The guys are in the back, and they're yelling at him, "Come on, Johnny, come on, Johnny." I thought it was so funny because I'd never heard anybody call my dad Johnny. He also recalled his father telling the tale of digging a foxhole and staying in it to avoid gunfire and to be out of sight from enemy aircraft, surviving the Battle of the Bulge. It was in that foxhole, David Cantrell said, that his father had said to the Lord, "You get me out of this and I'll serve you the rest of my life." And he did survive. After coming back to Des Moines after the war, he became a Sunday school teacher for 20 years and lived in the family house on the east side that his father built in 1911. It was in that house that John Cantrell kept up with the radio skills that he had learned in the war. We had a little office in our house where he had his radio, and he is called a ham radio operator, David Cantrell said. To operate his radio, he had a huge antenna that allowed him to talk to people all over the world. He talked to a couple of stars, movie stars, that were on ham radio, David Cantrell said, and he talked to ships at sea. He could reach the whole world with his antenna that he had set up in our yard. That was a passion of his until the day he died. John Cantrell died 1990, 45 years after World War II was won, due to a lung-related complication. Because he died before the Ghost Army and its accomplishments were declassified in 1996, he never was able to revel in the role that he played in winning the war. "He didn't get the credit he deserved," David said. "The Ghost Army didn't get the recognition. They didn't get the medals, and they never talked about it." His family found out about their father's secret after he died when they found the diary that he kept in boot camp, as well as letters to and from loved ones. According to David, many of the letters that his father sent to his mother had parts cut out to keep the Army's secrets intact. David Cantrell said, though his father is receiving an extraordinary reward, he was a very ordinary man. He was a steady, dependable guy, but he was just a normal guy, he said. Founded in 2016 by Bayer, the Ghost Army Legacy Project is a nonprofit with a goal of preserving and honoring the legacy of the Ghost Army. The project lobbied for 7 years to secure a Congressional Gold Medal for the 23rd Headquarters Special Troops and the 3133rd Signal Service Company. President Joe Biden authorized the medals on February 1, 2022. Caleb Sinwell, a student at Nashua Plainfield High School in northeast Iowa, helped lobby for the Ghost Army to receive the Congressional Gold Medal. And in 2021, Sinwell won the National History Day National Competition for his project on the Ghost Army. He joined the Ghost Army Legacy Project to help convince elected officials, including Senator Chuck Grassley, to co-sponsor the bill to award the Congressional Gold Medal. "We must never forget the bravery and sacrifice of this incredible group of servicemen," Grassley said in his statement to the Des Moines Register. "I look forward to seeing Congress honor their valiant efforts, including by posthumously recognizing Ghost Army member and Iowan John Cantrell." The Ghost Army Legacy Project also has collaborated with the National World War II Museum on a Ghost Army exhibit that travels around the country. This year, it will travel to Columbus, Ohio, and St. Louis, Missouri.
And this story along the right-hand column of the front page, Iowa House votes to permit schools to arm staff. The bill would grant legal immunity. This story by Galen Bacarrier and Stephen Gruber Miller of the Register. Teachers and other school staff could obtain a professional permit to carry guns on school grounds under a Republican-backed bill that passed the Iowa House Wednesday night following a tense debate. House lawmakers voted 61-34 to pass House File 2586 Wednesday night. The bill would also require the state's largest districts to employ security officers or school resource officers in high school buildings unless the district's school board votes against it. Private schools, as well as colleges and universities, would also be allowed to arm staff. Lawmakers shared emotional stories on the House floor, recalling recent school shootings in Iowa and instances when they had been notified that their children's schools had gone into lockdown. Republicans proposed the legislation weeks after a shooter who was a student at Perry High School killed sixth grader Amir Jolliffe and Principal Dan Marburger and wounded a half dozen others. Supporters have touted this measure as a key step in preventing future shootings and increasing security in Iowa schools. Bill Thompson, a Republican from Boone, outlined the training that school employees would have to complete in order to obtain a permit to carry a weapon on school grounds. Thompson said, quote, "This bill sets a very high standard. Because we're talking about the safety of our children, the bar must be high. We recognize that this responsibility must be taken very seriously." Democrats and those opposed to the measure say more armed personnel won't make schools safer, raising concerns about lacking mental health resources and school security infrastructure while blasting Republicans' priorities on the issue. Representative Lindsey James, a Democrat from Dubuque, said, "The Republican solution to combat gun violence is more guns. The Republican solution to school safety is more guns. Iowans are crying out to us for common sense gun safety laws." Staff who carry guns under the bill would be granted qualified immunity in the cases of reasonable force. Qualified immunity protects government officials, including law enforcement, from lawsuits alleging that they violated a plaintiff's rights. Supporters of the bill have said including the immunity would make insurance providers more likely to cover districts who have armed staff. Those who want to carry firearms will be required to go through a permit process that includes one-time, in-person legal training that covers qualified immunity, emergency medical training, and communication training, as well as regular firearm training and live scenario training. That process would be approved by the Iowa Department of Public Safety. Thompson, the Republican floor manager from Boone, said, "The strict training regimen outlined in this bill ensures that the employees who acquire this permit are equipped with the skills and the proficiency to act appropriately in the event of an emergency." The legislation builds on a previously passed law that let school employees carry firearms, but did not require districts' insurers to cover them. Two Iowa school districts in recent years approved arming their staff before later reversing their policies. Spirit Lake and Cherokee both opted not to go forward after EMC Insurance declined to cover the rural districts ahead of the 2023-24 school year if they proceeded with giving guns to staff. Last year, House lawmakers passed a bill that would have barred insurers from denying coverage to districts based solely on the district's decision to arm their staff, but that measure failed to pass the Senate last year. Thompson, the floor manager, said school district officials have told him that they believe passing this bill would spur other insurance companies to begin offering policies in Iowa. Democrats said providing immunity would result in no one being held accountable if a student is hurt or killed at school. Representative Beth Wessel-Crochelle, a Democrat from Ames, said, "This bill may take away or reduce the risk to an insurance company through qualified immunity, but it does not reduce the risk to the student. This bill puts more children in the line of fire," she said, "and nothing is more frightening." House Majority Leader Matt Windschuttle, a Republican from Missouri Valley, said the bill would allow districts to seek a different insurance carrier. He said, "I've had numerous conversations with insurance providers outside of the one that has a monopoly. They've said they're willing to do this. They've looked at the language in this bill, and they've said, yes, we can do this." Districts with more than 8,000 students would be required to employ security or school resource officers in buildings where high school students regularly attend class. However, the local school board could hold a vote to opt out of that requirement. School districts with fewer than 8,000 students would be encouraged to employ school resource officers at the high school. The officers would have full police powers and be paid in part by a grant established under the bill. Each district would receive $50,000 in matching funds to help cover the cost. According to an analysis of the bill by the nonpartisan Legislative Services Agency, the average cost to a district to hire a school resource officer is estimated to be $63,000. Most of the state's largest districts would be required to hire multiple resource officers.
And another House vote item here regarding our schools, written by Stephen Gruber Miller. House votes to require schools to show pregnancy video in class. Iowa schools would be required to show students a computer-generated video detailing the stages of pregnancy, like the Baby Olivia video developed by an anti-abortion group under a bill that passed the Iowa House Wednesday. The bill, House File 2617, requires human growth and development and health in health classes in seventh grade through high school to show a three-minute computer-generated video detailing the stages of pregnancy. The bill says the video shown should be comparable to the Meet Baby Olivia video developed by Live Action. Medical groups like the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists say the video is anti-abortion misinformation designed to manipulate the emotions of viewers. House lawmakers voted 59-35 Wednesday to pass the measure. Two Republicans, Representative Chad Ingalls, a Republican from Randalia, and Tom Moore, Republican of Griswold, voted with every Democrat present to oppose the bill. All other Republicans present voted to support the measure. The bill now goes to the Iowa Senate. The bill's floor manager, Representative Ann Osmondson, Republican of Volga, said that the Baby Olivia video is not required. It is simply a suggestion. The bill ensures the teaching to our children of basic facts about human development in a very approachable way, Osmondson said. This is scientific information. This is teaching basic biology to our children, and it helps to answer one of life's biggest questions, where did I come from? House Minority Leader Jennifer Confis, Democrat of Windsor Heights, accused Republicans of pushing a political agenda in the classroom. This is indoctrination, she said. This is putting content in the classroom to change students' mind about a political issue. I don't want to ever hear again that teachers indoctrinate students. Please vote no. Live Action and makers of the Baby Olivia video describes itself on its website as, quote, leading pro-life advocates, quote. The group says that it exists today to shift public opinion on abortion, and it is dedicated to supporting a culture of life. The video begins by showing sperm swimming to an egg, as the video's narrator says. This is the moment that life begins. A new human being has come into existence. The video measures pregnancy using weeks after fertilization. That's different from weeks after the last menstrual cycle, which is what a pregnant person would typically hear from a doctor. Iowa politicians and educators said in a letter to state lawmakers that by using weeks after fertilization, the video misleads viewers because the framing indicates milestones happen about 2 weeks earlier than is accurate. The video also uses disputed language about a fetal heartbeat, which it says can be detected just over 3 weeks after fertilization. Doctors say in most cases, cardiac activity cannot be detected in an embryo until about 6 weeks of gestation, and it is inaccurate to call the electrical impulses generated by the embryo's cells a heartbeat at that stage of the pregnancy because the embryo does not yet have a heart. Representative Molly Buck, Democrat of Ankeny, said that the Baby Olivia video deliberately misinterprets the timeline of fertilization, the timeline of fetal heartbeat, and other medical facts about fetal development. The questions of when life begins is deeply personal, she said. It varies among individuals, it varies among families, and honestly, it varies among faiths. It is not the role of our chamber to prescribe what people believe or require teachers to influence young people with propaganda. The Iowa bill is similar to a law enacted last year in North Dakota. This year, West Virginia, Kentucky, and Missouri are considering their own versions of the legislation.
The story across the bottom of the front page of the Register, Grassley takes credit for prodding the FBI to investigate an informant. The story by Brianne Fannensteel. U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley took credit Wednesday for prodding the FBI to investigate whistleblower claims made by Alexander Smirnoff, claims that have since been resulted in the former federal informant being arrested on charges that he fabricated a bribery scheme involving President Joe Biden. Grassley told Iowa reporters during a weekly press call, "Just think of what I did for the people of this country, for making sure that somebody was misleading the FBI is no longer going to mislead them. And think what I did for the people of this country to make sure that the FBI is doing its job." Last year, Grassley publicly released an internal FBI document known as an FD-1023 that contained unconfirmed allegations from a confidential source claiming that the CEO of Burisma, a Ukrainian energy company, paid a $10 million bribe to the Bidens. The claims have been at the center of the U.S. House Oversight Committee's investigation into Biden and his family's business dealings. And once Grassley made the document public, Republicans seized on it, calling for Biden's impeachment. But the informant, Alexander Smirnoff, was indicted last month and charged with two counts of making a false statement and creating a false and fictitious record for information that he gave to the FBI. His lawyers say he could be sentenced to 15 to 21 months in prison if convicted. A federal judge on February 26th ordered Smirnoff to be jailed while awaiting trial because of concerns that he could flee the country. Senator Grassley said Wednesday his role in the saga has been misunderstood, arguing that his only goal was to ensure the FBI was following up on a lead that he believed they had been ignoring. Grassley said, then they interview the Smirnov and they find out he's been lying to them. Well, they've been paying him for 10 years. So the bottom line of it is, if I hadn't made this public, the guy would still be working for the taxpayers and still probably being paid for it and still be lying to them. Grassley did not comment on whether the charges against Smirnov have undermined the House GOP's impeachment efforts. He said, that's a whole separate issue I got nothing to do with. House Republicans have frequently pointed to the now debunked information that Smirnov provided in their efforts to impeach Biden. House Judiciary Chair Jim Jordan, a Republican from Ohio, said in a January Fox News interview that the most corroborating evidence we have is the 1023 form from this highly credible confidential human source. He said that in January while discussing the House of Representatives impeachment inquiry into Biden. Jordan said the information the informant gave to the FBI is, quote, at the heart of this matter. But many of those same Republicans have now downplayed Smirnov's role in their impeachment efforts. House Oversight Committee Chair James Comer, a Republican from Kentucky, and one of the Republicans leading the impeachment inquiry, said in a statement that the probe is not reliant on the FBI's FD-23. Instead, Comer contended that the inquiry, quote, is based on a large record of evidence, including bank records and witness testimony revealing that Joe Biden knew of and participated in his family's business dealings.
Iowa poll coming on Trump, Biden, and Reynolds by Mike Troutman. With the presidential election taking shape and the Iowa legislature in full swing, a new Des Moines Register MediaCom Iowa poll will share the results of Iowans' opinions on a host of significant bills, as well as their views on Joe Biden, Donald Trump, and the state's top elected officials. The initial results from the March Iowa poll will be published online first thing Sunday morning at the DesMoinesRegister.com. The results also will be published in the Sunday Register print. The poll will test Iowans' opinions of the job performance of President Joe Biden, Governor Kim Reynolds, Senators Joni Ernst and Chuck Grassley, Iowa Attorney General Breonna Byrd, State Auditor Rob Sand, and the Iowa Legislature. It also will gauge Iowans' feelings toward Biden, Ernst, Grassley, Reynolds, Trump, and presidential candidate Nikki Haley. And it will show who Iowans say that they would vote for in November if Biden and Trump are the Democratic and Republican nominees, as well as whether their ages are a concern. The Iowa poll also will show whether Iowans in each of the state's four congressional districts say that they are more likely to vote for the Republican or Democratic candidate this fall. The polling will gauge Iowans' thoughts on important legislation this session, including overhauling Iowa's area education agencies, allowing over-the-counter sales of birth control pills, requiring gender identification changes on birth certificates, raising the starting pay for teachers, allowing the hiring of private CPAs to conduct state agency audits, reducing the state income tax, removing the gender balance requirement for state boards and commissions, banning ballot drop boxes, reducing the time period for mail-in ballots, extending Medicaid coverage after childbirth for low-income Iowans, but raising the qualifying income requirement, allowing felons to appear on the ballot for president and restricting ballot challenges for presidential candidates, which would benefit Trump. Requiring higher education students to be in the U.S. legally to receive in-state tuition rates. Allowing health care providers to not provide services if it goes against their ethical or religious beliefs. Allowing teachers and other staff to carry guns in schools after receiving training. Finally, The poll will show how Iowans feel about the new state law banning books depicting sex acts from schools. Each article will be published online and in print. The quickest way to receive the results is by signing up for news alerts through the Des Moines Register app. You also can find the results as well as more ACE political reporting in our daily politics newsletter. You can sign up for the free newsletter at DesMoinesRegister.com/politics newsletter. The Iowa poll, a Register exclusive since 1943, is a closely watched indicator of candidate strength during election seasons, as well as Iowans' opinions on other important issues. Seltzer and Company, an Iowa polling firm rated highly by political and polling insiders, conducts the Iowa poll. The Iowa poll is produced in collaboration with Mediacom, the largest cable company in Iowa and the nation's fifth largest cable company based on video customers.
And we'll move to the Metro and Iowa section now. Across the top of the page, House passes plan to reshape K-12 classes. On the right-hand side, district sued over alleged exploitation. In the left two columns, Workforce Development unveils a mobile help center with some pictures. And then across the bottom, the Iowa Senate votes to require Iowa businesses to use an e-verify program. Let's start at the top of the page. House passes plan to reshape K-12 classes. The bill includes a list of required social studies topics. This story by Galen Bacarrier includes a small photograph of Representative Stephen Holt holding a copy of the U.S. Constitution as he speaks at the state capitol. Lawmakers in the Iowa House passed a pair of bills Wednesday that would reshape curriculum in K-12 schools, outlining a list of required social studies topics and establishing regular reviews of the state's educational standards. Under House File 2544, first through sixth graders' social studies classes would be required to include themes such as the cultural heritage of Western civilization and the study of and devotion to the United States' exceptional and praiseworthy history, in addition to a range of historic documents and people. It passed the Iowa House by a vote of 58-37. And House File 2545 would require the state's education director to conduct a comprehensive review of Iowa high school graduation requirements and curriculum and recommends a statewide literacy plan by July of 2025. That bill passed the Iowa House 61-33. The two GOP-sponsored bills come as conservatives both in Iowa and nationally continue to scrutinize how race, U.S. history, and other sensitive subjects are broached in classrooms and urge a back-to-basics approach focused on core subjects. Representative Brooke Bowden, a Republican from Indianola, said, "It's clear that our current education system is failing in history and civics. Our standards are too broad and vague to provide useful guidance," unquote. Democrats have pushed back hard against these proposals, expressing concern that prescribed curriculum would limit teachers' time and resources, that was not age or grade appropriate, and was sourced from out-of-state conservative groups like Civics Alliance without proper input from Iowa educators. Representative Heather Mattson, a Democrat from Ankeny, said, "It is not the job of this legislature to prescribe curriculum. That's the job of the State Board of Education and curriculum development experts." In an hours-long debate Wednesday evening, lawmakers on both sides of the aisle invoked stories from their families and social studies classes from childhood that tied them to U.S. history. Representative Helena Hayes, a Republican from New Sharon, spoke on her mother's immigration to the U.S. as an orphan. And Representative Steve Holt, a Republican from Denison, recalled his teacher's passion about the Battle of Iwo Jima, which he said inspired him to later join the Marines. Holt said, "Maybe it would not be a bad idea if our young people were taught about this epic battle. That's real history, and it's the good, the bad, and the ugly." Several Democrats who spoke agreed with that sentiment, but pointed to their own family's histories as a reminder of the dark spots throughout U.S. history that needed to be included in classrooms. Representative Ross Wilburn, a Democrat from Ames, said his great-great-grandfather, who escaped enslavement in Missouri and enlisted in Iowa, struggled to find housing after he served in the military. And his father's exposure to Agent Orange while serving in Vietnam led Representative Josh Turek, a Democrat from Council Bluffs, to being born with spina bifida, he said. Turek said, "This bill instructs teachers to teach about the many failures of communism, but not the inequality of unregulated capitalism. It instructs teachers to teach about the Emancipation Proclamation, but not about the Jim Crow South." The Standards Review Bill was amended by Republicans on the House floor to remove language that would have led to the banning of critical race theory and social-emotional learning in classrooms. Citing a severe lack of awareness among Iowans about the Holocaust and anti-Semitism, lawmakers on Wednesday added language requiring educational materials on the Holocaust to both curriculum and teacher training. Districts are required under the measure to add age-appropriate and grade-appropriate instruction on the Holocaust into middle and high school curriculum. Representative Skylar Wheeler, a Republican from Hull, who brought the amendment forward, said the current environment around Holocaust education sucks, he said, and cited recent surveys of Generation Z and millennials. Wheeler said, "I'm not going to sit here and say that there are schools that aren't doing this, but certainly there are a lot of alarming trends out there." That instruction would include the Holocaust's causes and ramifications, the impact of personal responsibility and societal response in the Holocaust, and the role of U.S. forces in World War II, among other topics. School districts would also incorporate Holocaust education into the professional development plan for those who teach courses in which the subject is taught.
Senate votes to require Iowa businesses to use E-Verify program. Stephen Gruber Miller. Iowa businesses would be required to use the federal E-Verify system to determine whether their employees are legally in the country under a bill that passed the Iowa Senate Wednesday. The Senate voted 30-17 Wednesday to pass Senate File 108, sending it to the Iowa House for consideration. All but one of the Republicans present voted in favor of the bill. Senator Dan Zumbach, a Republican of Ryan, voted with every Democrat to oppose it. The Senate has passed a version of the bill in past years, but it has never been taken up by the Iowa House. This year, the Senate's vote comes as immigration is shaping up to be a major issue in the 2024 presidential race and in Congress. The U.S. Senate earlier this month failed to pass a bill that would have created a new mechanism to shut down the border if illegal crossings reached a certain threshold. And congressional Republicans have indicated new border measures as a top priority for them. Iowa lawmakers are considering several bills this year that proponents say would help deter illegal immigration, but critics have described it as anti-immigrant. Senator Julian Garrett, a Republican from Indianola, said the border is probably the number one issue he hears about. "There's not a lot that we can do here in Iowa at the state level, but this is something we can do," he said, "and I think it will make a difference." Senator Janice Weiner, a Democrat of Iowa City, said if Iowa lawmakers are concerned about the border, they should contact their federal representatives and senators. Ask them to pass the bipartisan law on immigration reform and the border that was agreed to in Washington, she said. That's the solution. It's a federal issue. It is already illegal under federal law to knowingly hire someone who is in the country illegally. The Iowa bill would allow a county attorney, local law enforcement official, or member of the public to file a complaint with Iowa Workforce Development if they suspect that a company has violated the law. If a company is found to have violated the law by hiring an undocumented immigrant, the company would be required to terminate the employee and would be placed on a 3-year probationary period during which it would be required to file quarterly reports with the state listing every new employee hired during that period. A second offense would cause the company's business license to be permanently revoked. The Iowa Secretary of State's office would be required to maintain a database of companies found to violate the law. Employers could defend themselves in court by arguing that they did not knowingly employ an undocumented immigrant in violation of the law. Garrett said passing the bill would help level the playing field for businesses that already diligently check to ensure their employees are in the country legally. It's very unfair to law-abiding immigrant businesses and employees to have to compete with people that are coming across the border. And you know that they're pouring in across right now, he said. The Biden administration doesn't seem inclined to do a thing about it. Many of the Iowans' largest business groups are opposed to the law, including the Iowa Association of Business and Industry, the Iowa Chamber Alliance, National Foundation of Independent Businesses, Quad Cities Chamber of Commerce, City Rapids Metro Economy Alliance, Master Builders of Iowa, Iowa Grocery Industry Association, Heavy High Highway Contractors Association, and Agribusiness Association of Iowa. Senator Tom Bisignano, Democrat of Des Moines, read off a list of business groups who oppose the bill during debate. Everybody opposes this, he said, and it's not because they want to circumvent the law and use undocumented workers. It's because in their professional operation, it doesn't work. Bisignano said the program would also harm potential employees who are wrongly flagged. What about the employee, he said? What about the applicant who they got his middle initial wrong, or a letter in his name, or a number on the Social Security, and it's red flagged? And how long are they unable to be employed? Garrett said thousands of Iowa businesses already use the E-Verify program voluntarily. Several other states require the businesses to use the program. Right now, more than 5,000 businesses in Iowa use E-Verify, he said. They don't have to. It's not required. Why would they do that if this is such a horrible program?
Headline: District sued over alleged exploitation. Ankeny student accuses an ex-teacher of grooming. This story by Chris Higgins of the Register. An anonymous high school student is suing the Ankeny Community School District, alleging the district failed to protect them from a coach's sexual abuse. The lawsuit, filed February 24th, alleges a former volunteer high school sports coach groomed and pressured the underage student to engage in sexual activity and send explicit photos. The district failed to protect the student or monitor the coach while rumors circulated about the two, according to the lawsuit. The coach was charged with third-degree sexual abuse of the student in 2022, and the case was later dismissed that year. The student and their parents, who are unnamed, accused the district of negligence, negligent hiring, supervision and retention, breach of fiduciary duty, common law assault and battery, civil rights violations, and loss of consortium. The lawsuit alleges the former volunteer coach began grooming the student, who was part of the coach's program, in 2021 and communicated with the student on Snapchat. The coach soon began encouraging the student to sneak out and hang at the coach's parents' home, where they would engage in sexual activity, according to the lawsuit. The exploitation ended in September of 2021, though the coach continued to oversee the student's training and the student refused any further attempts at sexual contact. The lawsuit says the complaint alleges that rumors about them then swirled around school. The lawsuit says another coach informed the school about the situation in February of 2022. A school official called the student into the office to discuss the allegations. The student felt uncomfortable and embarrassed to talk about the situation, so they, and the Register is using they as a sort of generic pronoun here for the student, they denied the allegations, and an official said the investigation closed because there was not enough evidence. After the school contacted the student's parents about the allegations and the investigation, the lawsuit says the student admitted the sexual contact to their parents, who soon filed a police report. According to the petition, the coach was charged in April of 2022 with third-degree sexual abuse and later entered a plea. The coach received deferred judgment and the case was dismissed in October of 2022, the petition says. Information about the dismissed criminal charge is not available in online court records and could not be independently verified by the Des Moines Register. The lawsuit alleges the student has suffered severe and permanent emotional distress, has lost focus in school, and has become less outgoing while also incurring medical and counseling costs. The student's parents also have suffered, the petition says. Roxanne Conlon, an attorney for the family, said in an email to the Register, "School districts and school officials must maintain a high index of suspicion with regard to sexual misconduct by school employees." Conlon continued, "They must not brush it under the rug. They must not ignore rumors. They must investigate all potential sexual exploitation." The Ankeny School District did not have an immediate comment on Wednesday. District spokesperson Samantha Aux said the district had not yet been served with the lawsuit and would provide a statement once the legal team has a chance to review the complaint. Earlier this month, an Ankeny middle school teacher was arrested and charged with third-degree sexual abuse and exploitation due to an alleged inappropriate relationship with a student that lasted several years. Other pending lawsuits against the Ankeny School District include a teacher suing over punishment in the wake of an after-school drag show, a female former athlete alleging discrimination, and parents alleging staff failed to take action on a student assault.
Workforce Development unveils Mobile Help Center. Stephen Gruber-Miller. He's pretty busy these days. Iowa Workforce Development could soon be coming to your neighborhood. The state will begin developing a 32-foot-long bus that will serve as an Iowa Works Mobile Workforce Center, with career counselors and other Iowa Workforce Development employees helping unemployed Iowans find jobs. Governor Kim Reynolds unveiled the bus Thursday at the Iowa Capitol, and she said it will allow the state to assist when a community suffers significant job loss. It offers the same services and has the same technical capabilities that Iowans would find in any of our brick-and-mortar locations, but it has the distinct advantage of being able to rapidly deploy to any area of the state where Iowans need help in finding jobs or where employees are working overtime to fill them. Reynolds and said that the bus can also help the state reach unemployed Iowans who aren't aware of the resources that Iowa Workforce Development can provide them. Many Iowans don't seek out Iowa Works for career assistance because they continue to think as if an unemployment office, she said. And in reality, Iowa Works career planners provide one-on-one personal advice that seeks to match jobless Iowans with whatever resources they need to meet their career goals. Reynolds in 2022 signed legislation cutting the maximum number of weeks that Iowans can receive unemployment benefits each year from 26 weeks to 16 and requiring Iowans to take lower paying jobs sooner or risk losing their benefits. Her administration has also pursued other workforce initiatives, including creating a re-employment division within Iowa Workforce Development. Thanks to the changes made to shift the department's focus from unemployment to re-employment, out of work Iowans are now spending just 9.6 weeks on unemployment, Reynolds said. And I want to say that again, she says, 9.6 weeks on unemployment, and that is the shortest amount of time in more than 50 years. She also pointed to the state's 3.2% unemployment rate and 66.7% labor participation rate as evidence of the state's success in getting Iowans working. Iowa Workforce Development Director Beth Townsend said that the bus includes 10 workstations with companies and two computers and two television monitors that can be used for workshops and hiring fairs. The vehicle can provide the same services that can be received at our 18 physical Iowa Works locations with state-of-the-art technology that can make the difference for job seekers and employers looking to fill their skilled workforce needs. The bus will be across the state from the Ames Public Library on March 6 from 11 to 2, as well as at Camp Dodge on March 12 from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. for an event focused on soldiers returning from basic training. Businesses and communities can request that Iowa Workforce Development send the bus to their location through an online form. The Iowa Workforce Development website also includes a calendar with all the scheduled events for the bus. The bus costs a total of $479,000, which the state paid for through a combination of federal COVID-19 relief dollars and federal grants that support Iowa Workforce Development's rapid response efforts to aid companies and workers affected by job layoffs.
And I'll read two brief stories, one of which just moved on the Register's website. One dead in an Urbandale car crash this morning. Police are investigating a crash involving two vehicles that left one dead in Urbandale Friday morning. The Urbandale Police Department was dispatched to 86th Street and Douglas Avenue near the police department at around 4 a.m. A news release said police were still at the scene as of 7 a.m. and more information will be released later. And then a story from page 3C of the Metro and Iowa section. Ex-teacher gets 2 years in a plea deal. This story by Byong M. Byong. A former Dowling Catholic High School teacher was sentenced on Wednesday to 2 years in prison for an inappropriate sexual relationship with a student. 36-year-old Kristen Gant, G-A-N-T-T, was arrested in April on two counts of sexual exploitation by a school employee. She pleaded guilty to one count, an aggravated misdemeanor, on February 8th. According to court documents, Gant kissed a student for the purpose of her sexual arousal while she was a school employee and licensed teacher. Gant was an English teacher at the time. A criminal complaint said Gant admitted to police that she engaged in a romantic relationship with the student that involved physical intimacy on at least five occasions. Each of the physical encounters occurred in Gant's classroom after the school day had ended. As part of the plea agreement, the court issued a no-contact order with the victim that will remain in effect until February 28th of 2029. Gant also was required to register as a sex offender. Bond in the case of an appeal was set to $5,000 cash only.
Gas prices near $3 in Des Moines. Kate Keeley. You aren't making it up. Gas prices have increased each week in February. While the increase isn't as dramatic as the spike in 2022, prices jumped statewide and nationally during February. Gas prices are still cheaper than what they were in 2022 when Russia invaded Ukraine. The national average gas prices shot up to $5 a gallon and broke record highs, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration. Since the spike, prices have generally trended down. At the start of the new year, prices began creeping upward. The national average was $3.07 in January. Prices are nearing highs from last year. In February 2023, the average American paid $3.32 at the pump, according to Gas Buddy. As of Wednesday, the national average was $3.30, jumping 23 cents from last month. The average price of gas in Iowa is $3.05, according to AAA. This is a 10-cent jump from about 2 weeks ago. Polk County's average cost of fuel is cheaper than all surrounding counties, averaging $2.93 a gallon, according to AAA. And if you want to get the most bang for your buck, the cheapest place to fill up in Windsor Heights is Sam's Club. Across the Des Moines area, prices reach up to $2.99. Competition can drive differences in prices from county to county in Iowa, said Patrick DeHaan, head of the Petroleum Analysis for Gas Buddy. The more gas stations there are in a city or area, the cheaper fuel will cost. Makes sense? And after sub-freezing temperatures hit most of the country in January, refineries in Texas and Louisiana experienced outages. Those refinery outages caused the wholesale price of gasoline to jolt a little higher, DeHaan said. And by February, one of the largest oil refineries in the Midwest suffered an unexpected power disruption. The refinery has been down for 3 weeks, causing higher prices. Eventually, but not anytime soon, the summer season kicks off a new blend of fuel that tends to cost more than the winter blend due to the ingredients used. March and April are generally when gas prices increase from the lower winter costs. People also tend to travel more when it is warmer, resulting in higher demand. DeHaan expects prices to stay on the rise, peaking around Memorial Day, with seasonality pushing prices down by the fall.
Well, we normally don't read sports here right off the top in the first hour and a half, but the Caitlin Clark story crosses over from sports into news. So let's read a little bit about it. Register columnist Chad Leistikow says that Iowa women basketball Caitlin Clark entering the WNBA is perfect timing. Caitlin Clark possesses the audacity and conviction that is required every time she squares up and launches a 35-foot shot from the basketball hoop. So why would we have expected anything less bold when it came to the biggest decision of her basketball life? Clark's announcement yesterday afternoon that she is declaring for the WNBA draft was Caitlin being who she has always been, brash, confident, and determined to be the best at everything she does. And truly, it feels like the perfect time to clear the air and announce the right decision. How do we know it's right? Well, because Clark made it. The Iowa women's basketball star is wise beyond her 22 years. She has always said she would just know when the time was right, and she knows the time is right. Chants of one more year have been surfacing in arenas filled with Hawkeye fans the past few weeks, including Wednesday night after Iowa's 108-60 rout at Minnesota. Absolutely, it would have been an amazing thing if Clark would have returned for a fifth bonus season afforded to her due to the COVID-19 pandemic. But Clark has nothing left to prove to anyone, including herself. The number one scorer in major college points away from passing Pete Maravich as the number one division scorer, men or women, has captivated a nation, especially over the last year. To run it back again just wouldn't have felt right for her or for those of us who watch her. The college chapter in Clark's story is complete no matter how it ends. After committing to Iowa out of Dowling Catholic High School in West Des Moines, she vowed to take the Hawkeyes back to the Final Four for the first time since 1993. She's done that, and even took Iowa one step further to the national title game, where nearly 10 million television viewers watched. More record-setting TV ratings have followed. She has guided this year's Iowa team through a season filled with sold-out, Caitlin-crazed arenas and performed at a higher level than ever. She's averaging 32.2 points per game, easily her career best. The postseason isn't even here, and she's already set the NCAA single-season record for three-pointers with 156 in 29 games. Her game and her profile has gotten so big that it was inevitable that she would be personally ready for a bigger challenge. She undoubtedly can play in the WNBA with the best players in the world, so why wait? She's been running circles around everyone in the Big Ten Conference this season, like she did Thursday with her 33 points, 10 rebounds, and 12 assists at Minnesota in 29 minutes of court time. And she will get to test herself in Indianapolis, a basketball-crazed city that's in the Midwest, and a bigger Des Moines, as someone who lives there told me recently. The Indiana Fever have the number one pick in the upcoming draft on April 15th, barely more than 6 weeks away. Rather than signing up for summer classes at Iowa and beginning to figure out how to play without Kate Martin, Gabby Marshall, and Molly Davis, she'll be playing professional games within 2.5 months. Soon, she'll be throwing no-look passes to Aaliyah Boston in the post. But why tell us now? If the decision is in, why not now? It's the perfect time. Senior Day is Sunday at Carver Hockey Arena. Clark can go through the ceremony and know that this is it. You can know that this is it. We can all watch and cherish and embrace these final days with Clark in a number 22 Hawkeye uniform. Clark's final college game will come either when Iowa loses in the NCAA tournament or after the Hawkeyes raise a national championship trophy on April 7th in Cleveland. The greatest athlete in University of Iowa history is about to move on. But the Caitlin Clark Show isn't stopping anytime soon. We all get to keep watching what happens next. And that's the column from Register columnist Chad Leistikow.